This week on Hyperspace Broadcasts, the Moon Princess's identity is finally revealed to those who have been, for whatever reason, not looking at the screen whenever the character is on it. Welcome to Hyperspace Broadcast, a podcast where we discuss our memories of a specific Toonami program before watching it and trying to determine if it's worth revisiting. I'm Michael Doak.
I'm Peter Eby.
And this week, we're talking about Sailor Moon, episodes 31 through 40, closing out the first season / Sailor Moon Unmodified.
Yep, it's the final episodes of Sailor Moon.
And before we get into the summary, I want to point something out that I realized while taking notes for this block, which is that I don't know what Sailor Venus's civilian identity is. Like, I don't know what her name is.
Yeah, right. You almost never hear it. Maybe, like, once.
Yeah, and it's weird because I tend to use the characters' names interchangeably. Between their, I guess, planet and their civilian name. And, like, hers is the only one where I was just, you know, writing down a list of characters like, oh, wait, what is her name? So I looked it up.
Oh, yeah.
And it's Mina.
Mina? Oh. Yeah, well, it doesn't help that, like, anytime she shows up, she's constantly upstaged by her gravelly-voiced cat.
That's true. You know,
Hey, I'm Artemis. How you doing, guys?
Yeah. Artemis with his fucking, like, DJ voice is way better.
Yeah.
You know, it does.
Casey Kasem.
Sure. Well, I think it's funny, you know, how much more work Luna did than Artemis, considering that Luna found four of the five main characters, and Artemis, I guess, found Venus and just said, like, yeah, it's fine, good enough.
Yeah, Artemis is a piece of shit, is what you find out.
yeah,
because he also is just like starts criticizing Serena just randomly, and it's like, hey, dude, you just got here.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like when you meet like a new friend and like everyone gives some other guy shit as a joke, and this guy's like, yeah, fuck you. It's like,
yeah, right.
Looks at that guy like, no, dude, like, you don't know him.
You gotta earn the ability to dunk on somebody else.
Yeah. You gotta take your licks first before I can give them out. Yeah. Anyway.
So, that said, this is a pretty plot-intensive block, as you might expect, given that it's the end of the series.
All sorts of fun happening. We go skiing, ice skating, a lot of snow shit. Go to the salon, get our dues done.
Not one, but two backstory dumps. Two more, which there's already one earlier in the show, so that's a lot. And these ones kind of serve to underline those. Yeah, the backstory is getting kind of out of hand, and I guess that's kind of a decent place to start the summary for this block, which is an establishment of what we might already kind of know, but really more of a clear-cut example showing that, yes, Sailor Moon is indeed the Moon Princess, as everyone clearly established from them having identical haircuts and looking exactly the same. It also kind of indicates what the other scouts, what their roles were. Apparently they're all princesses of their respective planet.
So Jupiter lives on Jupiter, apparently.
Yeah, I guess.
In the cloud of gas.
Yeah, I guess all planets in the solar system have just a human race that once lived on it. I don't know why I'm saying that so skeptically.
Yeah, I mean, good luck with Jupiter and, I don't know.
Saturn. And any planet out beyond Mars, pretty much.
Yeah, somehow they're all from there. But yeah, and they all served in the princess's court, and the evil Queen Barrow of Earth invaded and attacked, And Darien, the prince from Earth, you know, was in love with the moon princess, and they were getting together, and then, you know, suddenly...
And then, of course, everything gets fucked up by Beryl. Yeah. So, basically, in the early episodes, we have Serena kind of not wanting to deal with being the princess, because I guess it's too much responsibility. Also, Malachite kidnaps Darien, and he starts getting sort of brainwashed into serving the Negaverse. But that's all kind of secondary to the new formula stuff.
Sort of a new formula.
Yeah, really the return of an old formula, specifically Jedi's formula.
Sort of. It's like trying to lure Sailor Moon in with fads, like before, like with Jedi. Except Jedi was like trying to get energy in general. And this one is specifically like he's trying to find out who Sailor Moon actually is, like the human identity of Sailor Moon. Because obviously somehow he can't look at the only other person with the same hairstyle and put two and two together. So,
yeah, and of course they're looking to steal the crystal at this point. That's kind of
from her
the whole game. Tuxedo Mask ends up showing up a couple times and being an adversary, although never really, you know, attacking them. Yeah,
he's always kind of like a little on both sides, but like, hey, just give me the damn crystal, like.
He's continuing to be Knuckles, but a more antagonistic Knuckles.
Yeah.
Eventually, we get to these episodes where the Sailor Scouts are trying to find the entrance to the Negaverse, which results in one that we'll talk about a bit later. And then we have the second backstory dump, which is an episode-long flashback showing everything that happened right before everybody gets sent to Earth and into the future.
Yeah, including like everything attacking, and like it's kind of some interesting stuff. They see like some of the armies and stuff coming in and attacking, and the original Nega commanders, like Zoisite and Malachite doing their thing, and Jedi. And it ends with Queen Serenity like sending everyone into the future, or to, like, be reborn in the future without their memory, using the Silver Crystal. And then she dies, I guess?
Yeah. She is the one unambiguous death, I guess, in this show so far.
And that brings us basically to our final episode. Do you want to talk about that now?
Yeah, I guess we might as well. The final episode's kind of weird, because A, it was cut together from a two-part finale for the show originally, and then like as a result it's pretty fast-paced to the point where it feels like some context was probably cut from some of what's going on.
Now, I did know a bit ahead of time. I knew that like Sailor Scouts die, and that in this adaptation for kids, you know, they changed it so it's a little less dark, so it's like, oh, they get kidnapped by the Negaverse, or they're trapped in the Negaverse. Basically have this moment where they're on this final trek to Queen Beryl's lair through the Arctic, where they somehow don't complain about how cold it is, really.
Except Serena, of course.
Yeah. And they, the Sailor Scouts, like, try and get there, and these doom and gloom girls, these, like, evil Sailor Scout kind of
pairings. The rowdy, rough boys to the Sailor Scouts, Powerpuff Girls.
Yeah. I like the Rowdy Rough Boys.
Yeah, they were
fine.
And
then they ended it by kissing them, and I thought that was dumb.
I really don't remember almost anything about the Rowdy Rough Boys, except for what they're made of and their name.
Quite distinctly. Yeah, they're made of, like, shit and death.
No, it's Snips and Snails and Puppy Dog Tails, because that's the alternative to...
Sugar Spice and Everything Nice.
Yeah, right. Anyway... This is not a Powerpuff Girls podcast off the top of our heads.
I think Powerpuff Girls was on Toonami. We'll get to it eventually, I guess.
Maybe.
But in any case, these like actually very successful villains start fighting each Sailor Scout and killing them, or, you know, kidnapping them, I guess.
They don't say kidnap ever. Not kidnapping, they just say capturing. Sent to the Negaverse. Like, I don't even think they say capture specifically.
No, but basically, implicitly.
Yeah, it's basically like sent to another dimension, Dragon Ball Z style.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. It's really, not, they kill them.
It's pretty obvious what it's supposed to mean.
And so it becomes this like horrible like kind of trek through hell to try and get into Queen Beryl's lair, where one by one each Sailor Scout is sacrificing themselves so like the others can make it further. And that was
and
a
it's
moment
ridiculous.
Where, yeah, it's like, crazy.
Let's point out that it was like, I thought maybe someone would die. I didn't think literally everyone would be killed off one by one like it's a fucking slasher movie. Like, it is so... And they just come, like, back to back as well.
Yeah,
there's
absolutely
no pause between characters getting killed. It's just one after another.
And that was one of the moments
goes
where...
in.
Yeah, and that was one of the moments where I was like, okay, like, obviously this has changed from the original, and I know that. But just the point where, like, I liked the final episode, and so I wanted to watch the original, so I did. And, you know, I understand they had to change it, obviously, from having the scouts die. But I will say that with the original, the actually having the deaths and stuff like that, they also included so many little satisfying kind of emotional moments that were sort of like important cappers to each character's relationship to Serena. And those were lost. Which,
yeah, whereas in this, they're pretty much just killed. It's a weirdly sanitized, I guess, bunch of characters being killed off.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
you know, Sailor Moon goes down into the Negaverse. She finds Darien, sort of plays the Fisher-Price locket, which I'm not sure we've talked about.
That's right. There's this locket that she found a while ago that it belonged to Darien in the past, and it just looks like a fucking Fisher-Price toy, and it's so annoying when it shows up. It's this big, like, poofy kind of, not poofy, but this big, like, cartoonish star with a little, like, circular thing in the middle that you, like, push down on, and when you push down on it, it starts playing the Sailor Moon theme and, like, with, like, the tinky kind of piano. It's straight up a Fisher-Price toy. Like, this is a thing made for three-year-olds. But everyone just, like, treats it like it's totally normal.
Yeah, and of course, it's, like, a major plot focus as well, weird way. Which
so
really
just this,
underlines
like,
how ridiculous it looks.
Yeah, she holds this dumb toy out and plays it, and he stops, like, trying to slash her with the sword, and eventually just kind of gets his memory back, and...
Well, pretty immediately gets his memory back, and then Beryl kills him / wounds him. And so we finally get Sailor Moon versus Beryl, and Sailor Moon beats her pretty easily, but then Beryl comes back in a second form, because, you know, everything has to have a second form.
Yeah, because Beryl gets hit by, like, Tuxedo Mask Rose, and she, like, she's wounded pretty bad, and she's like, ah, fuck. Well, she definitely said, I'm sure.
Yeah,
and then
I think
falls,
that's it.
And she kind of just, like, sinks to the ground and talks to the evil spirit thing and gains all of its powers. Like, the evil thing that she would talk to
the
in
Negaverse
a couple episodes.
That she refers to a few times.
Yeah, yeah, and she like, merges with that and becomes this gigantic form where it's, like, this big flower that emerges from the ground, from the Arctic, and then she emerges in the very center of it. And I like her outfit. She has, like, her hair, her red hair is kind of done up, and she's in, like, a red dress. And,
yeah, it's an interesting character design. You know,
I like the transformation.
Then, of course, Sailor Moon sort of transforms into the Moon Princess. She uses the wand to kind of have, like, a beam struggle with Beryl.
Yeah, she does.
A little bit.
It's totally a beam struggle.
Dragon Ball Z
and
style.
They start playing, like, vocal music in it, which is, like, you know, as cheeseball as the vocal music was, it was still just, like, a moment where you kind of get chills, where it's like, oh, man, shit,
and
this
such
is really
a
happening.
In such a classic, like, anime way to end something, too. I feel like Gundam Wing did a similar thing.
Right in the big moment with the beam struggle, and then, like, the spirits of all the other Sailor Scouts help her hold the wand to keep up the beam struggle.
To make it more powerful.
I love that ending.
Yeah, it's fine.
It's just like, I like, not, fuck you, it's not fine, it's great. I enjoyed it a lot, man. It was like, I don't know, it just felt, like, epic, and, like, of course, like, I don't know. Maybe I'm a sucker for those kinds of things. But
yeah, I guess
everyone's teaming up and it's working and it's explosions.
Right, right. And I think the thing is, like, I don't know what I really expected the final struggle to be, but I mean, it looks fine. It's cool and everything. It's just not a whole lot's really happening. They're just kind of shooting energy at each other or pushing energy against each other. Whatever.
It's true. It's not like a knockdown dragout battle. They basically just, like, she changes form and then they have a beam struggle and that's
it. Yeah, exactly. But you know, Beryl gets destroyed and then we sort of have this end cap where Artemis and Luna are talking about how all of the characters have been resurrected and they don't have memory of any of this.
Yeah, they lost their memory, which, like, the first time I heard that, it's just like, no. That means next series we're gonna have to watch like 10 more episodes to 10 to I don't know 30 more episodes.
Yeah,
where they have to
the
meet
whole
again.
Series
yeah, so they have to all meet again. Apparently they do that like fairly quickly in the next season.
I mean,
so
sure, I don't care.
That's
it's
good.
Gonna be a while before we get to that, but
it's true.
It's yeah, we'll see how they resolve this potential issue, but yeah. Which, I guess, not to spoil the whole bat aspect, but no one dies permanently. They all get resurrected.
Yeah.
So,
now,
happy ending.
We'll argue on the bat segment also. There's a little more, you know, because Princess Serenity, or Queen Serenity dying is arguable. She dies in a flashback.
Sure.
We'll figure it out. Now,
of course, early on in this block, Zoicide gets killed off as well for failing, because
that's true. But I'm pretty sure I specified not any antagonists.
Yeah,
obviously, because
right.
Queen Beryl gets blown up. But yeah, so you know, but this block generally, most of it was like the kind of casual episodes where they're trying to lure Serena in with this dumb fad and turn it around, and you know, try and identify her through some ridiculous means, like, oh
yeah, yeah.
Here's a discus throwing competition. If she's really good at discus, maybe that'll be her.
Yeah, right. It's basically
energy
the
frisbees.
Same as fucking season, or not season one, but the first 10 episodes again. But it works a little bit better, and
it
we'll
does.
Get into that later. So I'm gonna pick out a favorite episode of this block, which is kind of a weird one, but that's episode 36, Last Resort, which is an episode entirely centered around Serena and her family going to a hot spring on vacation, which is apparently where her parents met.
Oh, yeah.
And what's weird about this episode is that it features a monster that has nothing to do with, like, the series mythology. Like,
yeah,
it's some kind of water sprite that was cursed for being jealous, something like that. And
yeah, there's like a legend behind it that they describe.
Yeah, and it's super weird to me because I guess originally there were a couple episodes here and there that had this kind of unrelated monster stuff. But even in the original version of this show, you know, the non-Deke cut, it can't have been that common to have something like
right.
this. So
there's like one episode I watched that did that was cut, and it's like, okay, like it really doesn't seem common. Vast majority of the episodes would be plot related, at least tangentially.
Yeah, but this one is kind of, I mean, it's still plot related because Darian comes in and there's some talk about the locket, etc.
Oh yeah,
but it's just weird that they kept it, I guess,
yeah,
knowing that those episodes tended to be cut, and it really comes out of left field. And it kind of sounds like I'm dumping on this episode, but it actually works pretty well. Like, a lot of it works around Serena's interactions with her family, which are usually pretty funny.
Yeah.
There's a pretty funny scene where she's listening to the locket in the car on the way there, and her dad, like, jokingly says, like, oh, did a boy give that to you? And then she's like, yeah, kind of. And he fucking flips and
yeah.
is, like, yelling at her about it while driving, looking back at her. So they're just careening all over the road ridiculously.
And she's like, oh, no, it was Melvin who gave it to me. And he's like, oh, Melvin, that's fine.
Yeah, yeah, or something like that, I think.
He has no actual chance of dating my daughter.
Yeah, Melvin is thrown under the bus once again, offhandedly. But the thing that's really funny about this episode is that later in it, all the other Sailor Scouts show up, and it's established that this place is pretty far away from, yeah, I guess, Tokyo. So I have to wonder how they got there.
Yeah. Why were they nearby? They have just, like, all popped out of the bushes like they've been hiding this whole time.
Yeah, yeah. And then, I mean, this leads me to believe that it's like a Troll 2 situation with the boyfriend following in a camper van, like following the family on vacation, which I want that to exist in some animated form and not as, I guess, the fan fiction I'm going to write.
Uh-huh. Is that why you like this episode?
Honestly, yeah, kind of. Like,
reminds me of Troll 2.
No, it's
A+.
It's a funny thing, and it stands out from the rest of this pack, honestly, because it's
it's very different.
It's
a decent episode.
And, you know, it's done pretty well. I don't think it's, like, necessarily the greatest episode of the show, don't get me wrong. But of this block, I think it's the one that I enjoyed the most, just by virtue of being weird and, I guess, off-kilter from everything else.
Yeah, on the other hand, my favorite episode of this block is a pretty conventional episode, just in terms of Sailor Moon. It's called Bad Hair Day, which is a dumb title, but, I mean, of course.
It's a fine title. It's as good as any other title of any one of these episodes.
Sure. Bad Hair Day is an episode where Serena's, like, spends the whole time moping because Darien had just been kidnapped and brainwashed, and that's fucking her up. And I guess she doesn't even know if he's safe or not.
And, yeah, right. He's just taken by Malachite. He could be dead, right, as far as they know. They haven't seen him yet.
And seeing her mopey for, like, half the episode is, like, it's actually kind of interesting. It's a little different for the show. And I like that there's a scene where all the other scouts are talking, and they're just, like, actually showing genuine concern. Even Rey, especially, is showing concern for her, which is, like, actually a little touching to me.
Yeah, that they manage that instead of just Rey shitting on her, as always.
Yeah, yeah. Artemis, however, shits on her. That's the one moment where it's like, Artemis, what the fuck? You just met her. He's like, why doesn't she just get used to it? Act like a princess.
Yeah, right.
It's like, shut the fuck up, Artemis.
And this episode, if I recall, also has Serena and Mina hanging out a bit, which is kind of fun.
That's right, yeah. This is, like, the only episode where you hear Mina's name, probably, like, one of the two.
Yeah, one of the two where she plays a major role in her civilian identity.
And this is actually kind of part of the larger formula, indicative of the larger formula of this block, which is not only is each episode the bad guys trying to figure out who Sailor Moon is through ridiculous fad bullshit, they also highlight one scout each episode and kind of bring them in and have them have time with Serena and you learn more about them. So this one is, like, Venus and Serena. There's a skiing one that's, like, Rey and Serena, ice skating with Jupiter and Serena.
They kind of cut Mercury out a little bit. I don't think she actually has an
that's
episode
true.
Like this.
Actually, no one cares about Mercury, unfortunately. But what I like about this episode, you know, there's little funny scenes and stuff like that too. It's just, like, her being so mopey and listless that she's just fucking up even more than usual and being more clumsy. But I think the real strength of this episode is the villain. This has hands down the best Yoma monster that they have shown in this show yet, because it is the most thematic and ridiculously stupid monster that has it's awesome. So this is a barbershop theme badass who has all sorts of different weapons. It's this, like, ridiculously hulking monster woman with her hair is just insane because she's, like, a salon monster.
Yeah, and it should be mentioned that when, you know, the regular salon owner transforms into this monster, it's done by a white, red, and blue-dressed, I guess, hairdressers spinning around her into a barber pole-like tornado.
Yeah, yeah. Fucking perfect. Like, the colors of the barber pole and everything.
Oh, God.
Such a... Like, there's so many little good, perfect little details to this monster. Her hair is insane. She's got, like, 10 braids coming out. Looks ugly as hell. But her weaponry is awesome, because, like, how rare is it that you'll see a monster use two different types of attacks, if any attacks, in this show?
Yeah, instead of just getting blown up.
Think back to, like, the fucking... Tuxedo Melvin monster is just like a crab monster, like, punches people, or, you know, sometimes they have like scissors or something. This one,
yeah, right.
She has like an arsenal of fucking thematic weaponry. It's perfect. She's like, okay, here, how about this hair dryer, super fucking hair dryer, and then it incinerates everything that it touches. Or switch to the machine gun that shoots barber scissors and like pins you against the wall and stuff. Or how about the gigantic electric razor that she pull starts like a chainsaw? Like, it's perfect. Not only that, but there's also one other moment that I really loved in this was Sailor Moon. Like, the monster gets weakened. It's probably got one of the longest, like, monster fights in any
of
these
episodes. Yeah, it is pretty extensive, actually.
Yeah. And I guess that's part of the reason why the monster has so many different abilities.
Right.
But, when you first think the battle's over and, like, the monster's a little weakened, Serena takes out her wand, about to do her sure kill and do the healing spell, and all of a sudden...
I like... it's funny, you know, I never thought about this, but the sure kill is such a wrong phrase for the thing that heals people back to their normal selves
the
from
sure
monsters.
Kill heal.
The sure heal, I guess you'll call it.
But she's about to do her sure kill thing. Suddenly, bam, what happens? A rose... And it's like, well, what? Tuxedo Mask? Tuxedo Mask fucking interrupted her sure kill. It was perfect. It's like the perfect exact opposite of what good Tuxedo Mask would do. He always interrupts the bad guy from killing them, and now he does the opposite.
Yeah, right. The roles
are really
reversed. I don't
know why I'm so
tickled by that. I'm not sure. It's
but
interesting.
I like it. I was very surprised when it happened.
Yeah, and of course, this is the first time we see Tuxedo Mask since he gets kind of beaten, I guess, and taken away.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, so you get to see him being a jackass again. Like.
Yeah, and they're not sure if he's on their side or bullshit, even though it's pretty clear that he's not, because he stopped Serena from beating the monster, but whatever.
Also, when he shows up, like, right after the rose is thrown and it, like, knocks the wand out of her hands, he shows up by being in a dark corner, just sitting in full regalia, of course, in a barbershop chair, and just, like, turns it around slowly, like, oh, God.
The fucking classic Tuxedo Mask in normal situations.
Yeah. Yeah. God. One of my favorite things about this show as a whole.
Sure. So, what about your least favorite episode?
My least favorite is another one of these kind of smaller episodes, not, like, one of the big plot ones. It's called episode 33.
It's called episode 33.
Shut up. Episode 33, Little Miss Manners. Which I don't know why it's called that. It's a dumb name. But
Peter's your criticism for literally every title. It's a dumb name.
I don't like any of the names.
It's the title of, I assume, a book series that I grew up on.
It does sound like a little kid's book series.
Mr. Men and Little Miss something books. I'm sure there's a Little Miss Manners. There's no question.
There is a... and it's, you know, the whole plot, it's like what... There's, like, a cool finishing school held by this countess that's, like, how to become a well-mannered princess and behave like a princess. And Serena wants to join so she can be more princess-like, I guess. And she finds her own dumb way to join. And... For some reason, they, like, make every one of the princess candidates throw a frisbee.
Yeah.
Like, yes, throwing discus is a sport that I love very much.
Royal,
it's an honorable
sport. For sure.
Yeah. And it's like, what, are they trying to figure out if it's Sailor Moon by how well she throws frisbees? Because she throws energy frisbees? It's like,
is the answer to that question.
It's ridiculous. But I can't, you know, I can't totally put my finger on why, but it's just had kind of a sloppy feel this episode. It's got a lot of Serena in training, but not a lot of, like, the other scouts and interactions with them. which kind of makes for a boring watch for most of the episode. The little that does involve the full team is actually pretty entertaining. There's a scene where they all just kind of appear.
Yeah, ballroom dancing.
Yeah, they all appear in like a later scene where it's like, oh, you all joined and you're all ballroom dancing. And like while Serena's completely messing it up, you see like Jupiter's amazing at it, and so is Mercury or Amy.
Yeah, and then Ray and Venus suck at it for some reason.
Yeah, Ray and Venus are just terrible and keep fucking things up. Like that scene was actually pretty funny. But also the monster in this episode just grosses me out.
Because, yeah, it's pretty weird.
Yeah, I have to wonder if it's like if the reason this monster turns into, so basically this courtly woman turns into a water demon monster with covered in clams.
Yeah, it's just like clams all over her dress, basically.
Like a clamshell dress kind of thing. But what's really gross is she opens up her clams and shoots this disgusting, like, dark green clam juice all over them.
Yeah, and it turns them to stone for some reason. Like, why she's a Medusa, I'm not entirely sure, but
yeah, it's fucking gross. Like, it's just grossing me out for some reason, because it's like every little clam on her opens up and starts blasting this garbage at them.
To be fair, it's pretty gross looking. It's very strange. It's, like, I don't know, it's probably the grossest of any of the villains' tactics?
Yeah.
Jeez. Tactics so far.
Yeah. I wonder if her appearance is like the result of some Japanese pun or something. Who knows?
I mean, sure.
You know, you could speculate so far about, you know, what changes.
What that's supposed to mean, yeah.
Who knows? Maybe it's just random.
Yeah.
So what about your least favorite?
Yeah, so my least favorite, there's an episode, it's episode 38, it's called Fractious Friends. Do you hate that title?
We're doing geometry?
Boy, that's a reference. So basically this episode's interesting because it starts out kind of in media res with the scouts chasing down Sailor Moon and attacking her.
Yeah,
and then we kind of slowly figure out that this is all part of a scheme to get Sailor Moon into the Negaverse, because they're trying to find the Negaverse like entrance at this point.
Yeah, yeah, and they want to like lure the Negaverse to Sailor Moon.
And yeah, I guess she's like betraying them or something. I'm not. Here's the problem with this episode.
Yeah.
I can't completely tell you what their plan actually is, which is the biggest problem with it. Like, this show is usually very straightforward, and this episode is not. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, but they don't pull it off very well. Like, I mean, shit, I don't really know what they were planning to do. There's this one scene in particular at the end that this is especially bad.
Yeah.
Where Sailor Moon is being attacked by the villain of this episode, and all the other Sailor Scouts are like in the bushes watching, and Rey is resisting like going to help Sailor Moon because she's like, stick to the plan. But it's not clear like what exactly the plan is at this point. Like,
yeah,
Sailor Moon's just being attacked. They have, obviously the villains haven't bought the ruse, and like, yeah, it's, I guess
one of the mentions offhand, they're like, yeah, you've got to wait until Amy scans the portal, that because Malachite opens a portal for Serena to walk through and join him, and it's like, but never, like,
yeah, she doesn't have her visor on,
she's clearly never analyzing anything. Like, it just seems like that line was added in.
It's just strange. I'm not really sure what they were going for with this episode, and it's frustrating because, I don't know, I think it's just a missed opportunity. I think it started interesting, like, more interesting than any other episode in this series, possibly, but it never really connects the dots enough. I don't know.
Yeah,
like, making that complaint, because I always feel like it just outs me as a really lazy watcher of media, but I feel like this is not handled well. Like, I'm usually not lost when I'm watching shit. I was lost with this.
Yeah, right. The villain of this episode, Ninjana, is pretty cool looking. Like, that's at least one thing it has going for it.
Yeah, her just evil form is super cool. Her
just this ninja monster.
Her human form is completely stupid because it's a photographer who's basically like a shitty like Dennis Hopper in Apocalypse Now character. Like,
yeah, her outfit's ridiculous.
Yeah, she's just kind of a hippie photographer and
bell bottoms with stars on them.
And her voice is annoying. I don't know. It's a weird villain. And why she's a ninja, I'm not
sure.
Yeah,
she goes back and forth from being like the most badass looking ninja villain you've ever seen.
Yeah, that can multiply. Like, come on.
Yeah. And she can multiply, and she can like take pictures by putting her fingers into like that camera frame.
Which
pose.
To be fair, makes no sense for a ninja. But
it's still really cool.
But yeah, it's fine.
And then, you know, yeah, just it does the classic ninja like suddenly make a bunch of shurikens appear in her hand by like flicking her wrist.
Yeah, and it's whatever. The point is that in general, this episode's like one that seemed like it could be really interesting, and I don't feel like they really pull it off.
Yeah, it kind of ends up a disappointment. There's one other design that I really like. I'm really enthusiastic about. It's another monster, and it's this ice skating. In the ice skating episode, where like it's kind of Jupiter focused. She's really good at ice skating. Everyone kind of goes ice skating, and there are these Olympian ice skaters, I guess from Russia, who get made evil by malachite.
They have the most like stereotypical Russian accents. It should be pointed out. It's pretty hilarious, actually.
Yeah, and they really they have a ridiculous Russian accent. Like one of them looks like Jem from Jem and the Holograms. Like she has the same like
the pink
and yellow hair, and she, I don't know. I like her kind of villain design, at least in the fact that like when she turns into a villain, she has like a mini kind of transformation sequence that I really liked. I don't know. This is a little detail that I like that you don't ever really see with the other villains.
Yeah, with the villains, it's kind of cool actually.
Yeah,
I guess my moment, and it's not really a moment, but it's another sort of design thing. Is that Darien's prince outfit looks super cool.
Looks a lot like a Fire Emblem character.
Yeah, like with it on, he looks like Marth, like so much. It's
insane.
Pretty ridiculous.
With the sword and everything, like, yeah, and the armor design, absolutely. I wonder, you know, it almost makes you think, like, who copied who, if anyone actually did any copying. But,
yeah,
you know.
Sure. Well, let's get to the break. When we get back, we're going to talk about our thoughts on this block and then Sailor Moon as a whole, talk about the bet, and what we're going to watch next.
We are the champions of justice.
You're watching Sailor Moon on Cartoon Network.
Welcome to the break, listener. If you like the podcast, please consider subscribing or leaving a review on Stitcher, TuneIn, Blueberry, that's BLUBRRY.com, or iTunes. iTunes reviews, you know, the more we have, it auto-generates advertisement on the iTunes site and puts us in front of other people's eyes. So your writing reviews is super helpful and super awesome. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/HBpod and Twitter at HBpod. We're currently taking in listener-submitted bets. Please send these via Facebook, Twitter, or email. And our email is hyperspacebroadcastpod@gmail.com. We seriously want to hear from you. Currently, we're taking bets on Tenchi Universe, but unfortunately, if you're listening to this, you have a very short amount of time to get a bet in before we actually record the episode. Our next episode will be up on September 20th, and we will be back to our thoughts on Sailor Moon in just a moment.
Sailor Moon now continues on Cartoon Network.
So we're back, and let's talk about what we think of, I guess, this block, and then get into sort of more of a series overview. So what did you think about this block to begin with?
This block was better than I had anticipated at first. When at first things were showing like, oh, the formula now is going to be Jedi again. It's going to be, like we said, a thousand times, like fads that lure in Sailor Moon. I was like, oh god, like, you know, this can only be saved by more character interactions with the scouts and stuff like that. But I felt like the formula is a little more complex than that. They used it as a way to kind of pair Serena with each of the other scouts and develop relationships like that, which I enjoyed. And also some of the ways they like try and identify Serena as Sailor Moon is really ridiculous.
Yeah, like fucking
in the bad hair day episode, they like put their I don't know what these things are, the giant hair dryers that go over your head that I don't think they've used since like the 50s in real life.
Probably
but
not.
Are in cartoons and stuff. Yeah, they put them over their head and then it like runs this computer scan simulation on the computer,
which there's like a great little animated bit for that. Yeah, obviously
it's awesome
to
and then
analyze
like,
their hair.
And then it's there's the skiing one where they're like, all
before we get to the skiing one, I just want to point out that when they analyze the hair, you're forgetting the biggest moment of this episode, which is that Venus sits in one of these things. They analyze her hair and then they're like, oh, she's Sailor Moon. Now, there's two ways to explain this.
Yeah, because they found a hair at a previous fight.
Yeah,
that's Sailor Moon's hair. We're going to compare it.
Yeah, one is that hair was actually Venus's hair. They're both blonde, so who can tell the difference? The other, which is the one the episode goes with, is while Venus was brushing Serena's hair earlier, one of her hairs got on Venus, and that happened to be the one they scanned.
The one in 600 million chance.
Yeah,
right. She's gonna find a single strand of hair to analyze, and it's a loose one from Serena.
Oh man.
Yeah, no, I was excited too because I thought I was like, oh, I figured it out. I get it because they have the same hair color and they're in the same place. So they thought it was Serena's hair, but it's actually Venus's. No, it's not.
No, it's a ridiculous explanation that makes no sense. But yeah, there's like the ski resort episode.
The ski resort one I really love because there's no fucking reason as to why they're like, we're going to hold a ski competition. It's like the Moon Princess ski competition, which couldn't be like more inconspicuously named as a trap. And they're like, yeah, well, clearly the person who's best at skiing has got to be Sailor Moon. Like, why?
And again, like, this is a thing that is insane because just the episode before with the finishing school, they established the villains know that Sailor Moon's super clumsy. So why she would be great at skiing, who knows? It doesn't make any sense.
It's confusing because they're like, well, she's the Moon Princess, so she would be polite and courtly and everything. So that's got to be Sailor Moon. But also, we know she's clumsy. Like,
They're really testing for clumsiness.
The criteria are all fucked up.
Sure, but whatever. Like, that's all beside the point.
It all made for an enjoyable block, and I like how they wrapped up the show. Like, there's not much more for me to say on the in terms of the last block as it is.
Right.
What about you?
Well, I mean, I tend to agree for the most part. I was really expecting some dire episodes.
Sure.
Into a hairdresser episode as the very first one after the like plot stuff was finished with.
Well, I think it really helps when it's not just Serena and Luna making fun of Serena.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's a big thing. I think the other big thing for me is that the villains in this are themed. Like, the Monster of the Week is always themed after whatever the thing is. The ski villain has, like, snowman heads all over her body in what may be the most insane villain design I've ever seen in anything. Like, it outpower Rangers Power Rangers. For me, that's the big thing about this that keeps it from being sort of Jedi trash bin territory.
Yeah, exactly. The villains in this one are real strong.
Or at least strong designs.
Design strong-wise.
And by strong, we mean really dumb.
But, by strong, I don't mean actually powerful.
Or cool-looking, just like really stupid-looking, but also being themed in such a way that we happen to enjoy. Yeah, I mean, I think the ending was fine. Like, I feel like I'm probably going to be kind of continuously disappointed with the endings of shows like this, because I kind of was with Ronin Warriors 2, and maybe I expect too much, like, for a final confrontation. I'd say this show probably pulled it off better than Ronin Warriors.
I loved it, man.
But, yeah, I mean, it was fun. And then the everyone losing their memory, we'll see where that goes. But overall, I thought this block was pretty good. I mean, pretty consistent with the show as a whole after the first 10 anyway. So what did you think about this show as a whole, Peter?
You know, as a whole, of course, it took a little time to start. Those first 10 episodes were rough, as you can imagine from our initial reactions.
As we said pretty clearly.
But once the show kind of got in gear, I really enjoyed the kind of like just lighthearted attitude of the show. Part of the things I really enjoyed about it was the character design. You know, is just really iconic. Especially the color schemes and the hairstyles, pretty much is like entirely what make up the characters.
Well, yeah, sure.
But like, they're also unique in terms of like personalities and behavior, and I really enjoyed that. You know, you get a lot of like fun little interplay between the characters, just kind of talking shit on each other.
Yeah, Ray and Serena's interactions are generally pretty funny.
Yeah,
etc.
Just like, unfortunately, like I would say, the biggest obstacle for the show was the dub and like the kind of editing they did also, which they had to do the editing. That's fine, but the dub was difficult at times. I thought, you know. Like, it's funny for the right reasons sometimes, but mostly it's funny for the wrong reasons.
Yeah, right. Like, the dub, sometimes the writing is fairly good, and sometimes the delivery is good, but a lot of the time it's just kind of, you know, not at all.
Well, yeah, it's like the dialogue and the choices made by the voice artists range from acceptable to totally 90s cheese to perplexingly awful. Like, I don't know, man. Like, Molly sounded good, but was also... Well, no, she didn't.
No, she didn't. You don't have to sugarcoat this. You know, it's not an actual 14-year-old girl you're screaming at here.
That's true. Like, it's true.
It's a weirdly...
Molly!
The most exaggerated accent. Yeah, God.
Yeah. Melvin was great. I don't know. But he's, you know, not
Melvin's
too hard to do that.
Pretty exaggerated,
huh?
Too, though.
Of like, course. He's, you know, one-dimensional, just, I'm a nerd. I'm on the internet.
Right.
But, you know, besides that, I like some of the animation. I like the transformation sequences. I think they're really well done. They're probably the best transformation sequences I've ever seen in a show.
Damn. That's a bold claim. I mean, I'm not sure I disagree with you, but...
I can't really think of any other transformation sequences that,
man,
that
what about
add up? Like, what, Ronin Warriors? Like,
no,
oh,
I was
boy,
gonna say, like,
some
what about
Rose Petals?
What about Domon in G Gundam having the like weird skin put on him?
Yeah. The butt shot in Domon's transformation
struggling
every time.
Struggling against it painfully.
Yeah, I forgot about that because I haven't seen it since I was a kid. G Gundam, man, that's like what we started this podcast to watch.
that's for me. Speak for yourself, yeah. It's
like, sorry. One day, man. It's going to be a while.
Keep anyway, going, sorry.
Yeah, anyway. Yeah, you know, it's like some of the animation quality stuff I liked, and, you know, some of it is just kind of the time of a long-term series. But, yeah, you know. So what did you think about Sailor Moon as a whole?
Yeah, so I have some pretty, like, wide-ranging thoughts, so I guess I'll try to keep it fairly short, but I would say generally I enjoyed it, like, way more than I was expecting to.
Yeah.
Especially, of course, again, after the first 10 episodes, I was really expecting it to be garbage, and it wasn't. It was, I think, to me, like, the ultimate word that I feel about this show is competent. And like, there's, I think, one thing that's interesting about it, aside from that, kind of, is that there's something about it that's really relatable, in a way that I don't think any of the like cartoons on Toonami directed towards my demographic were at all.
Yeah, yeah. Like, you definitely don't get, you definitely can't relate to like Hiro Yui.
Yeah, yeah. And even just like a lot of that relatability comes down to just the fact that the characters are in like junior high or high school.
Yeah.
And that matters at all.
Yeah, and they're facing the real world. Yeah, and they're facing the real world and facing, you know, the kind of stuff that we faced at that age or at the age when we watched, where it's like, oh, I'm going to school, I'm thinking about, you know, thinking about who I want to, I don't know, go on a date with, I guess. Like,
yeah, sure.
How the hell do I do that?
That kind of awkwardness is, like, yeah, you know, speaks to me as a formerly and still very awkward person. But like, it made me think of a Spider-Man Homecoming, honestly. Like, one of the things
still
that I've
seen it.
It's very good. You should see it. Like, one of the things about it that I really loved is it feels like Peter Parker is a high schooler. Like,
yeah.
A high schooler who happens to also be a superhero, you know? He doesn't feel like a superhero who has to go to high school sometimes. I don't know. It's
yeah, sure.
Like, the balance is there. That said, like, obviously I have to agree on the voice act in front. Like, I'm not someone who is sensitive to bad voice acting in dubs or shows in general for the most part.
Yeah, whereas I am.
And it was pretty clear to me, like, yeah, this is not good. Like, I would say probably 70% of the cast is at least not very good, like, range into just terrible. Like, Molly obviously is ridiculous.
Yeah, right.
With the exception, I think, like, Serena is the one character that I would say is pretty routinely good, actually, which I'll give some credit to her voice actresses, Tracy Moore and Terry Hawks, who I guess combined were Serena throughout this show.
Right. Never even noticed the changes.
Yeah, right. But I think that, like, the big thing for me is that this show is very much a show of a genre. That genre being, you know, kind of like Sentai shows.
Well, Magical Girl.
Well, technically, yes. But, I mean, I would say that shares a lot of, this show in particular, shares a lot of DNA with Sentai. Probably because
warriors, transformations and sure kills and shit.
Actually. Yeah, and like Power Rangers as well.
Yeah.
I mean, they're very much the same show.
Warriors.
Yeah, which may have something to do with the fact that this is kind of one of the first Magical Girl shows, from what I understand. So
definitely one of the first, like, huge ones.
Right, right. So that explains a lot of the kind of Sentai DNA, but like that DNA in a lot of ways is kind of not something I'd exactly call great. Like, it's entertaining, but I mean, you know, there's not
it's
a whole lot of depth.
It's the most like
to
formulaic
anything.
Thing ever.
Yeah, right. Like, the characters are kind of one note. We don't see a whole lot of change in them throughout the course of the show.
Yeah.
Like, the designs are iconic, yes, but I would not be able to tell you which Sailor Scout was which if it was just a shot of their face without the hair. Like, even the, you know, it's...
That's just how they draw faces, I guess, for the show.
Well, yeah, I mean, but even, like...
Of course, the hair's a huge part.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, like, I could do that with Ronin Warriors, for example, I think.
Yeah, you're probably right.
I mean, and, you know, the uniforms are basically identical, except for color. And, you know, but these are things that are true of Sentai shows, for the most part. Like, fuck, I couldn't tell two Power Rangers from each other if they were in black and white. Like,
oh, yeah, yeah.
They are iconic, but individually they look pretty much identical. And then, too, like, I was actually editing a clip for today, and I realized that there's a villain fight in one episode that is literally only 3 minutes from the villain first appearing, like, the demon version of the villain, to them being destroyed, and roughly half of that is stock footage.
Yeah.
Which, again, like, it's a Sentai show. That's how it works. You know, you have to accept that. And that's why I say that I feel like it's a very competent show. Like,
yeah,
it does what it sets out to do very well, but it didn't really, to me, go above and beyond that at all. It was more of a, this is good. It's pretty entertaining. I think the comedy works, like, that's the strongest element.
Yeah.
But it wasn't something that, like, blew my mind.
So what would you say were your favorite episodes of the whole show?
I gotta go with episode 11, which is Match Point for Sailor Moon. It's an extremely subjective reason. Like, if you are going to, you know, if you're on the fence about watching this show, and you want to watch an episode, like, one of these two is probably the one you want to start with, just to get an idea of what the show is at its best. And for me, episode 11 was, like, you know, that was the one that convinced me, oh, this isn't gonna suck. Like, this show's gonna be all right. I'm gonna enjoy this.
Yeah.
You've got Sailor Moon in a tennis ball. You've got a tennis monster. Like, what more do you want?
A tennis player with demonic powers.
God. I forgot about that part somehow. Nephrite driving around a fucking, like, red sports car.
Yeah, yeah.
And his name being Maxfield Stanton. Yeah, no, that episode has it all.
Maxfield Stanton.
What about you?
I would say my favorite is actually the episode right after that.
Of course, yeah.
Episode 12, An Unnatural Phenomena. This episode we've brought up a little bit a couple times because I really do think it's the best representation of what the show's competency. So, beyond the ridiculous villain, which is like a gardener who gets turned into
some kind of plant monster. Yeah.
Yeah, but who also, like, possesses squirrels and butterflies to attack a construction site. Like, beyond that absurd bullshit, which is great, and some of the better absurd bullshit in the show, you also have this whole subplot with, like, Ray trying to meet Darien and trying to approach him and, like, ask him out, basically, in, like, the most, like, deliberately but random-looking way. And there's a lot of really good slapstick with that. And then suddenly you get Serena and Melvin, like, getting jealous and, like, dating Melvin to shadow Ray and Darien on their date.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, like, it's, like, the best of both worlds, like, comedically and absurd villain-wise. Like, the best of, like, the two kinds of comedy this show has to offer.
Yeah, I guess that's true. And it also dips into that sort of relatable / high school kind of storyline. All right, well, what would you say your, I guess, final recommendation on this show is? Is it a Visit, which is a show that's, like, great that you would recommend to someone who's not familiar with this kind of stuff? A Revisit, which is a show that's maybe not so great, but you think is probably worth seeing if you are, like, you know, you remember this, or Best Left in the Past, where I guess neither of those things are true, and it's kind of just garbage that you don't want to see ever again. That's really harsh for Best Left in the Past, to be fair. Right.
I'd say it's another solid Revisit. This is a show that, you know, if we were talking about a version without, like, some of the edits where they don't edit around the darker scenes or the more emotional parts, then I would say Visit it. I watched a little bit of the unedited version and really enjoyed the bits that I watched, and some of it even had, like I mentioned before, like, bits cut out that lend itself to how it's with the final episode, you know, it lends itself to these characters build in each other and, like, how their relationships turn out in the end. So, but as it is with this, I'd say it's a revisit, you know, you go back, you look at how it was, if you watched it when you were young, obviously, yeah, it's fun to riff on, and it's fun to watch a little bit. So I guess check it out.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I've been meaning to point this out for a while, but I'm not sure I feel that fun to riff on is necessarily, like, a criteria, just based on the fact that it's fun to riff on Sonic the Hedgehog, the 2006 game, and that's, like, a miserable piece of crap.
I think some pieces of crap you can actually like make fun of and have fun with, and some are so reprehensible and garbagey and shitty that they're not even enjoyable in that fashion.
I mean, sure, but like, can you think of any example of that for yourself other than Birdemic?
I could think of a couple examples, I guess. We don't need to go into it, but like, look, like, the thing is, that's not like the main criteria that keeps it from being left in the past.
Yeah,
if it
sure,
was just
sure.
something that was fun to riff on, I wouldn't say revisit it.
Yeah,
I'm saying
right,
revisit
fair
it
enough.
Because it's, yeah, it's still got a lot of just like nostalgic stuff to it, a lot of 90s to it, and a lot of kind of absurd shit to it that I enjoyed.
Okay. Yeah, I gotta say a revisit myself too. Like, I was actually kind of rethinking this initially, but like the dub really doesn't do it any favors, and I'm a little hesitant to say like this is a competent show with a bad dub, it's worth watching at all. But I think I enjoyed it enough that if you watched this as a kid, you should check it out again, because it is still pretty funny, genuinely, in a lot of cases. And I mean, I have a lot of good things to say about this show, even if I think that ultimately it's nothing particularly amazing. I'd be curious, honestly. I think there is like a redub of this version of the show. Like, I think Viz did a redub before they made Crystal. So,
yeah, like a more genuine dub of the show.
I'd be curious to see that, but of course, that's not what this is about. So yeah, I'd say it's
about
a revisit.
What aired on Toonami?
Yeah,
as
right.
Sad as that can be.
Oh man. So that said, let's talk about the bet, which there really isn't much to talk about except that. Well, I don't know. I mean, you kind of made an interesting point earlier by saying that Queen Serenity definitely dies.
Yeah, and she's definitely a protagonist. Dies in a flashback, but still, you know, dies on screen in a dramatic fashion. Then again, she does show up later on again.
I don't know. I don't think that counts just because she's not part of the main cast. Like, when I made this bet, I was intending main cast members dying, which they all do pretty much, but, you know, they're back at the end safely. So, I would say that you probably took this one.
Alrighty. Yeah, it's kind of up in the air. I'll call it for that. Yeah. Let's say, then, that the next series we're going to watch is going back to an old
it's
friend.
Really not suspenseful, because the audience will already know what we're watching.
Not true.
Like,
it's true. It's Tenchi Universe. We're going to that. We're going to see what it's like.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about... Well, no, I'm not. What am I saying?
I love Tenchi Muyo.
Tenchi Muyo is surprisingly good, but I've heard bad things about Universe. So I'm tempering my expectations for it. But in the interim, we're going to watch Batman Mask of the Phantasm, which I'm pretty excited about.
Nice.
Because I've heard really good things about it. I'm not sure.
I'm definitely game for another Batman movie.
Yeah, right. So we're going to be tackling that next week. So before we go, let's talk about listener-submitted bets for Tenchi Universe, which is to say that if you've been skipping the break for the last couple episodes, you may not be aware of it, but we are taking listener submissions for bets for our next show. We're trying some kind of listener engagement, which we really haven't in the past.
Yeah.
If you want to submit a bet, if you have an idea for kind of a thing that's tropey in the show that comes up a lot, which I'm sure there are many things in Tenchi Universe that come up a lot, feel free to submit that bet to us at facebook.com/hbpod, on Twitter at hbpod, or at our Gmail. That's hyperspacebroadcastpod@gmail.com.
And for what it's worth, I think we're probably going to be watching the uncensored version, because it's very difficult to track down.
Yeah, I've had zero luck finding a Toonami broadcast of this.
So if that affects your bets, I would also suggest don't do things that, like, you know, have huge numbers of counting. Like, every time there's an, like, the worst one, I think the worst bet we've ever done was like the how many animation errors in Robotech.
I would say the worst was the Leos being destroyed in Gundam Wing.
I like the Leos. That's at least countable. Like the animation errors in Robotech was like almost subjective at times, and yeah, were a big pain to like actually note. We eventually just kind of like were like, ah, fuck it.
Yeah, sure.
So, you know, if you can keep it, like, even, like, smaller bets, like, if something even happens once or twice.
Yeah, so.
But either way.
Something under 10 is usually pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. But, yeah, I'm psyched for this. I love our listeners. I do. I love you guys.
Indeed.
And I want to hear from you.
Yeah. Well, with that
that sounded
said,
natural.
Yes, it did.
And. I know how to talk.
It sounded about as natural as Sailor Moon says, closing out.
Like, how many of those were like, don't
Sailor
hurt the environment
says,
and believe in your inner beauty? And like, they repeated themselves a lot, I feel.
They ran out of road really, really quickly on Sailor Moon.
Especially
says.
In episodes where it's like the moral that she says at the end has fucking nothing to do with anything in the episode.
Yeah. Well, Sailor Moon says, this has been Hyperspace Broadcast. I'm Michael Doak.
I'm Peter Eby.
And be sure to revisit us next week. That's what Sailor Moon says.
In the name of the moon, I'll punish you.
Some acknowledgements. The bumpers were taken from the video Toonami, Sailor Moon, and DBZ Bumpers 1080p uploaded by YouTube user PooperScooper99. The opening and closing music is Vapor Dive In by Onatech off the album Onatech Instrumentals Volume 6. You can find more of their music on SoundCloud, and I recommend that you do, because it's pretty awesome. Rights were secured through Jamoke.